under growing pressure, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis finally shuts down the state. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, Florida is now under a safer at home order. We'll speak with a doctor from Mayo Clinic about what that means for slowing the spread of COVID-19. That's a little later. First, though, we have the latest for you on coronavirus. In the last 24 hours, Florida recorded an additional 1,000 positive cases of COVID-19. Nearly 8,000 people in the state have the disease, and there have been 101 deaths. Now, as I mentioned, under growing pressure from around the country, Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis finally issued a statewide safer at home order. It goes into effect at midnight tonight. Now, the order instructs residents across the state to stay home unless they're engaged in essential services. What that means is you should only leave your house if you need to go to the grocery store. You can go to the pharmacy or the bank. You can go outside and walk, but that's about it. And hospitals in our area are, of course, bracing for a surge of patients. We're going to get some answers in a few moments from Dr. Greg Poland. Poland is a world-renowned infectious disease expert affiliated with Mayo Clinic, and he will have the latest for us on the tracking of the disease. That's coming up. But first, this is a question so many Americans are asking right now as unemployment numbers are released for the month this week. And of course, they're spiking in such a scary fashion. People are wondering, when will they receive their direct checks from the government? They need them really badly to pay rent, mortgages, cover other costs like food for their kids. In reaction to this, Congress, of course, quickly passed a $2.3 trillion relief package to help soften the hideous economic blow this pandemic is causing. And we wondered, how will the money flow to individuals and businesses? We learned more about that from North Florida Congressman Al Lawson. He spoke with us earlier this week. Let's listen. Representative Al Lawson, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Let's talk about the stimulus that was passed by the Congress, the $2.3 trillion Coronavirus Aid Act. It's got a longer name than that, but that's the basic name of this piece of legislation. How quickly can a financial relief with the passage of this get to people who are struggling here in North Florida?
That's one of the things that we've been checking on with the Secretary of Treasury, and it appears it's going to be about 3 weeks. And so the clock has already started ticking after Friday. So we'll be looking at another well, right at 3 weeks, but it's very important that the money come down to everyone.
Right. So we're talking maybe the second week in April, April 13th, 14th, somewhere in there where people might start getting some relief.
Well, that's what is really needed because the economy, we don't want the economy to go clearly in the tank like it did once before in 2007. And so as a result, the stimulus money is more towards individuals and small businesses than it was before towards Wall Street. But this is the largest package that we've ever passed.
Right. People will get additional unemployment benefits and direct cash payments, $1,200 roughly for each adult, $500 for each child, and then $375 billion in small business relief. There's a lot more to this stimulus, but those are the big things the average person is following. Let me ask you, do you think additional stimulus, additional payments will be needed? $1,200 for most Americans will get them through maybe the next several weeks or month, but they might need more help if this crisis drags on for several more months.
Well, it is our belief that we will have to pass an additional package simply due to the fact that people are really struggling, and it's a lot of people that are unemployed at this particular time. And it is $2,400 for a family that is earning less than $150,000 a year. And so, plus the $500. And for the person who is head of the household, they can probably make as much as $112,000 and still receive the same benefits.
Right. Are you concerned that your constituents are going to be unable to, for example, pay rent here at the first of the month, and they might not get the money in time? Should landlords just hold a moratorium on rents and mortgage payments right now?
Well, what we have asked in the stimulus package is for landlords to give flexibility on rent or mortgage for at least 4 months. And one of the reasons is we don't want anyone to lose their house. We don't want people to lose their car. We don't want people to be put out on the streets. And that's one of the reasons why the stimulus dollars is coming in to aid. But they need to contact the landlords and let them know that they're not able to pay at this particular time. And the provision that deals with what you mentioned earlier with unemployment benefit, what is included is an addition of $600 a week for the next 4 months, you know, providing for another 13 weeks of federal funding benefits, and extend the eligibility to include workers and self-employed workers, which is critically important.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, unemployment claims have skyrocketed everywhere. Here in Florida, no different. It can be difficult to even file, though, for unemployment in Florida. It's a notoriously frustrating system, and the benefits here are pretty skimpy and short-lived. What are you hearing from your constituents about their struggles there?
Well, that is a struggle, but I've been on conference call with the Florida delegation, and we're on conference call at least once or twice a week to try to make sure that, and with the governor, that a lot of those requirements are relaxed at this particular time so people will have access to the money. We want people to know who are listening in that this money is not for the IRS, not for, you know, some of the things you think bills collector. This money is directly for the individual so that they can take care of their families until they're able to go back to work, and especially in the area of small businesses. So with small businesses, you know, besides having low interest loans, no interest loans and grants, so that they can keep their business. And the ones that suffer the most, you know, barbers, beauticians, you know, nail shops, all of those different circumstances that people don't realize that they hire a lot of people, but they also live from paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of businesses might not want to take on more debt. How can they apply for a grant, perhaps, as opposed to a loan?
Well, they would have the opportunity through the small business development centers, and hopefully the Chamber of Commerce is going to be pulling together. And last week, you know, we worked with all of the large banks, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, you know, Chase Manhattan, all of them, and all of the credit unions and so forth, all the financial institutions, they came through the committee that I'm in on financial services to make sure that they're on board. And that's one of the things we talked about at the delegation today. One of the young ladies was saying that Bank of America, a lot of them are ready for these consequences, you know. And these banks have very good reserves since Dodd-Frank. Mm-hmm. And so this is one of the things, when we put this measure in, I wasn't in Congress at the time in 2008 and 2009, but to put them in a position where there wouldn't be a financial collapse. And so the banks are ready. And in the committee, all the CEOs came and said, we are ready to go. We want to help out. We do not want this economy to go into the tank. It doesn't benefit anyone.
Sure. One more question, Congressman Lawson. This bill or this legislation provides $400 million for election assistance grants for all the states. Florida will get about $20 million of that, increasing the ability to expand early voting, voting by mail, online registration. How will this help preserve the election franchise for all Americans this fall?
Well, you know, that is a very big concern. And when we were on the conference call today, the delegation, we were trying to get, as a nonpartisan situation between, and they're doing it in other states, between the Florida congressional people to see if we can do voting by mail. you know, as long as, you know, they have stamps on it so they can be returned, because we don't know how long this is going to be with us. For example, many of them like myself have a primary coming up August 18th. And a lot of members are not going to be able to campaign. It's just not campaign season, you know. It's not fundraising season because of all people not working, people at home. You know, we want them to stay at home and to be safe, you know. And so that is a very big question. But one of the things I do want to emphasize, too, is we increased SNAP benefits by $15.3 billion to make sure that they have adequate food to feed their families and they don't have to have all of these waivers and work requirements in order to be able to do it. We're all in this together. You know, this is one of those epidemics here that affects everyone in any walk of life. And so as a result, you know, just like 2 weeks ago, I was seated next to a member of the Florida delegation who later on felt sick that night and tested positive. And all of us was in the same area. And so he self-quarantined himself for a couple of days, and then we had to be concerned about what is happening, and we trying to make sure that people follow what has been recommendation, big recommendation about church services, about community events, sporting events, that all of those things need to be taken care of, drawn to an end, because that's all you need to really spread it.
That's right. You cannot be too careful. We've said this over and over, but stay home as much as you possibly can.
Absolutely.
Work from home. Avoid big groups. Practice social distancing. Keep washing your hands. Do
right.
all of those things to flatten this curve of spread of disease. So, Congressman Al Lawson, always good to have you on the program, and we thank you for sharing these important updates to our audience. Stay safe, and thanks so much for checking in with us.
Yeah, and I just want to say one other thing before you leave. Some people are calling and saying, I owe the IRS. Are they going to take my money? You need to let them know, no, they're not going to take it. You know, that money is coming down to everyone. And they might, and there are some people who haven't filed income tax, but we can work with them to find a way to get a mail paper check, you know, in the mail. You know, and so... And student loans has been, we made sure for the next 6 months that student loan payments don't have to be made.
Yeah, that's another important one.
Right. And I want to tell you, so some of the ones who are more middle class and then go, you are allowed to draw up to $100,000 out of your 401k or your IRA or your 529 plan without any penalties.
That's important, too.
Very important.
These are all important updates, and I'm so glad we could grab you for them, Representative Lawson. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Much more still ahead. We'll be right back. This is First Coast Connect.
Electro Lounge is now on Spotify. On the road or at home, take us wherever you go. Just search WJCT 89.9 on Spotify, where the Electro Lounge is always on.
Keep up with what's changing in China.
There's actually no other millennial generation in the world that can rival China's pace of change.
Discover the colorful history you can explore in the home city of Bull's Blood Wine.
It's very rare to see anything from the 15th century Turkish Ottoman era, but that minaret is one of a kind.
And hear what our listeners are thinking about on the next Travel with Rick Steves.
Saturday morning at 7 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, a lot of us are home a lot more of the time right now. Have you noticed everybody getting into baking? They're baking bread. They're trying new recipes. They're posting them on Instagram, sharing recipes. Hey, you got to do something to pass the time in self-quarantine and in this safer at home reality we're all now living in. Cooking and baking is comforting too, isn't it? Well, renowned food stylist, New York Times contributor, and founding editor of Martha Stewart Living, Susan Spungen, is a frequent hostess and a renowned cook. And she just released a gorgeous new cookbook. It's called Open Kitchen, Inspired Food for Casual Gatherings. If you're looking for a new cookbook to get into and you're really interested in perfecting how to take photos of your food to share with all of your other friends who you can't see in person right now, this is the book to check out. I spoke with her recently. Let's listen. Susan Spungen, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Your book, Open Kitchen, is gorgeous. Producer Heather Schatz and I could not wait to look through it. It's just a delicious treat and a great gift. I would encourage anyone to give this book as a gift. You're just a renowned food stylist and food person. Mm-hmm. And so how do you make it look so easy? I guess that's my first question. You make it look, you make what I know is really hard look really easy.
Really, but it's not really hard. That's the thing. I really want to encourage people to, practice cooking. I talk about this in my intro, and it's like cooking is a practice, just like maybe yoga or meditation or anything like that. It's something you have to do to get comfortable with and good at. So you can't just look at the book. You actually need to get in the kitchen and, you know, try a few things. And just, you know, if you're not comfortable with cooking, you need to get comfortable by doing it. That's like the advice, the advice that I give people. What else can I say? I mean, yes, I have been doing it for a very long time, so it is easy for me, but I'm aware of the things that are kind of like pitfalls for people, and I think I sort of address those in my recipes. I do a lot of hand-holding and anticipating of, you know, what people's questions might be. So hopefully by following my recipes, they'll feel more comfortable and more at ease.
Right, following the steps. Now, You were the founding food editor of Martha Stewart Living, and I think that explosion of success that you and Martha saw, that really showed just what a literal and figurative hunger there is in this country for people, women and men, really wanting great tips on how to be better cooks. I don't think anyone could have anticipated how much demand there was for it, and there continues to be today. What?
Absolutely.
Do you see that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I do think, you never want to, like, kind of take credit for something that's been, like, a sea change, kind of tidal wave movement. But I do think that, what we did at Martha Stewart Living, it was kind of the right thing at the right time, and it really got people interested in kind of better living at sort of any price point. We had our Kmart line, and, you know, anybody could sort of have nice things at any price point, which was, I think, one of the sort of equalizing effects that we had. And having it in the magazine, the food and the style and everything that we presented, it just inspired people to try things and to do more and give them something to aspire to. So I think I still sort of try to do that in my work as well.
Now, let me ask you about how Instagram has affected the way we think about food. You're a renowned food stylist, and with Instagram, we are all would-be food stylists.
Right.
Everyone's looking to take that perfect picture of this perfect plate.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any tips for people on how they can do that better?
I do have a few, because sometimes I see some of the things that people are doing. I mean, usually if it's not looking like a great picture, and even if I look back at my early Instagram stuff, I've gotten much better at it myself, I'm a good stylist, but I wasn't necessarily a good photographer. So I've gotten better at, you know, working with the light. And, one thing that helped me and does help me is sort of and I've given advice to people, is to find that beautiful light wherever it is in your house or outside of your house, maybe, because most people aren't going to like learn how to do professional lighting at home for your Instagram. So although you could take a class in lighting, or even ask someone at your sort of photography supply store, if you live in a big city, you could go there and talk to them, and they could actually set you up with some really easy lighting. That's one thing you could do. But otherwise, I would suggest just finding pretty light, and don't just, you know, plop the thing on your counter, turn off the overhead lights, try to work during the daylight hours, and maybe move that plate around from room to room until you find, and take a picture and see what it looks like on your phone, and see what looks the best. And also, I think finding a nice background, whether it's something you can also move around, you know, whatever it might be, a nice old tray that you have, or maybe just a nice piece of wood, or, you know, there's a million different things, and that makes a big difference too.
Now, you're known as a hostess as well. Any tips for people who are intimidated to throw that dinner party and have people over?
Don't be intimidated. First of all, I think that people's expectations are actually lower than I think people expect. So you choose a recipe that you think you can do, you know, first of all. And my book is obviously a great place to start. And pick something that doesn't look too difficult. I mean, if you picked absolutely anything in my book, your guests will be happy. So pick something that doesn't sound too scary to you, that looks simple, that doesn't have too many ingredients or techniques you're not familiar with, and just, you know, make it and follow the directions and follow the timing tips, even more importantly, that I give you in the book. Because, you know, people really just want to get together. You know, they want to, people really don't judge. I mean, I've had beautiful dinners in every kind of home, and, you know, or outside, whatever it is, it can be very casual. And I think, you know, people shouldn't really worry too much about what others are thinking. They will feel very happy to be fed by you.
That's right. And this book is a perfect gift to get someone started. It really
Absolutely.
Is gorgeous. And
thank you.
It's Open Kitchen, Inspired Food for Casual Gatherings. Susan Spungen, a pleasure. Thank you so
thank
much
you.
For being with
sure.
us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
A quick break, and in a moment, we will speak to a local senior who had underlying health conditions. She got COVID-19 and recovered. Her story next. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson.
Together, we host the Florida Roundup, a weekly live statewide call-in show looking at the biggest issues impacting the Sunshine State. If it's making news in Florida, you'll hear it on the Florida Roundup. So join us each Friday at noon, right here on 89.9 WJCT.
Ahoy, I'm Chris Thiele, host of Live From Here. Tune in for our broadcast this week with Mavis Staples.
Say it loud, say it clear. Things gotta change around here. Gotta change around here. Gotta change around here.
Plus Rachel and Vilry, Janine Garofalo, and Brian Platzer.
Saturday evening at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back to First Coast Connect. I'm Melissa Ross. Well, if you're just tuning in, we want to update you on important news that affects all of us. After resisting calls for weeks to order Floridians to stay indoors, on Wednesday, Governor Ron DeSantis finally issued a stay-at-home order, a safer-at-home order, as they're also known, directing all of us to stay home except for essential trips. Now, this order takes effect at midnight tonight, and it comes 1 month after the state reported its first coronavirus case. It also comes the day after Department of Health officials reported more than 1,000 new cases in the state in 24 hours, along with 14 new fatalities. The governor has come under harsh national criticism for dragging his feet on this order, particularly given the state's large senior population and also the controversy we saw over spring breakers possibly taking the virus and exporting it back to their home states. But anyway, this is something we all need to monitor and observe. The safer at home order takes effect at midnight tonight, and that means stay home unless you have to leave your house to go to the grocery store, the drugstore, maybe the bank. You are allowed to go outside and walk around and ride your bike. But that's about it. And the more we can all honor this directive, the safer we will all be. Particularly for the state's seniors, COVID-19 is so worrisome. We spoke the other day with a local senior citizen who got COVID-19, was sick with it for a couple of weeks, and recovered. Her name is Paula Horvath, and she's a retired UNF instructor. Now, you may have heard her story on this program the other day. We're going to rebroadcast it again because it is encouraging and hopeful. And while we in no way want to minimize the seriousness of this disease, we also want to note that the majority of patients who contract COVID do recover. We're also rebroadcasting this because our phone system is down this morning and we're working on getting that up to date. Here's Paula Horvath and her COVID story. Paula Horvath, good to talk to you.
Good to talk with you, Melissa.
And you're on the mend from COVID-19, which is great news. Take us back to when you first started experiencing symptoms. What's this journey been like for you?
Well, it's been an unusual one. I first started experiencing symptoms about 2 weeks ago, and they were pretty mild at first. I had incredible fatigue. I started to have a cough. And I had gastrointestinal issues. In fact, I never had a fever.
No fever. Wow. Okay.
No, so no fever at all.
So how serious did your illness get?
It got serious enough to keep me in bed, but certainly compared to all of the news reports I see of people who are getting very, very serious episodes with COVID, it wasn't like that. And I think probably a lot of people will have the milder to medium cases of COVID like I did.
So basically you just treated it like you would a cold, stayed in bed, took it easy, and waited for it to run its course?
That's exactly right. I was concerned in the beginning. The second day after I started feeling symptoms, I went in for a test because I'm over 65, and I have two risk factors. I have both coronary artery disease, and I have diabetes. So
oh, wow.
I wanted to make sure what was happening with me. It took 9 days to get the test results back, which in retrospect probably was a blessing because I convinced myself during those 9 days that I probably just had a bad cold. I would have been much more worried if I knew that I had COVID.
Wow. So by the time that you got the test result, you were on the mend from it.
I certainly was.
That's interesting. So now that you're basically recovered from it, what's the message you have for people out there, especially seniors like you who have some pre-existing conditions that could make them a little more vulnerable?
Well, thank you for asking that, Melissa, because I think it's really important that the message get out to seniors in particular that while this is a potentially deadly disease, most people will recover from it. We need to, even as seniors, I think we need to battle the fear that comes with COVID and recognize that while it is bad, we can recover from it. And I'd like to get that message out to people.
That is the message that we all need to hear right now. As scary as this is, what doctors and epidemiologists have been saying from the outset is that the majority of people who contract this virus will have mild to moderate symptoms. So that is something hopeful to hang on to, isn't it, Paula?
Oh, exactly. Especially for those people who, like me, had underlying conditions, who maybe thought that this was a death sentence. It's not. It's not necessarily. And they have to realize that.
Yeah. It's not to say that we shouldn't be extremely careful, stay at home, wash our hands constantly, practice social distancing, wear a mask if you can. We all still need to do that. I don't want to create the impression that we shouldn't be very vigilant. We have to try to flatten the curve. And you're lucky in that you never were serious enough that you needed to go into the hospital. You were able to treat your symptoms at home, right?
That's entirely correct. And from the minute I got the symptoms, other than when I went out for the testing, I didn't leave my house. And I think that's very important. You're correct. We need to flatten the curve.
Right. And if more people would self-quarantine as soon as they become symptomatic, that could help a lot of other people. So it's good to hear that you did that, Paula. What was it like?
Yes.
How long have you been in your house?
Well, I've been in my house for 14 days. And for many of those days, it actually wasn't so bad. Social media is wonderful during a time of quarantine.
Yeah.
And I found that my friends were wonderfully supportive. I bet I was on the phone with 6 or 7 or 8 people calling every day to see how I was. And I think that's important, too. If people don't call us, we need to reach out and tell them we're not feeling well. Tell them that we need to hear from our friends in this time of isolation, because we do.
That is so important to reach out to everyone in your life that you think might need a friendly hello. That is just critical right now. And, you know, I'm just so happy to hear that you're doing well and that you're on the mend from this. And it's great that we could tell your story so others can hear it too. This is the kind of hopeful message that I think will be of great benefit to so many listeners out there. So Paula Horvath, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, and keep laying low and hydrating and getting better every day. I'm happy to hear you're doing all right.
Well, thank you, Melissa. And to all of Jacksonville, stay safe, stay inside, and stay in contact with those you love.
Great advice from her. Well, hundreds of first responders across Florida are in quarantine right now because they've been exposed to people who might have coronavirus. Some of them have tested positive for COVID-19. Health News Florida's Stephanie Colombini looks at some of the challenges first responders are dealing with as they work during this pandemic.
Most Floridians are being told to stay home, but that's not an option for firefighters, paramedics, or police officers. They continue to respond to emergencies in their communities, rarely ever knowing for sure if the people they'll interact with have COVID-19.
It's something that's in the back of their mind every time they go.
That's Darla Portman with the Tampa Police Benevolent Association. The union president says 911 dispatchers are screening callers and asking if they have symptoms common to the coronavirus, like fever or cough. But with some people not displaying symptoms, it's hard to know if, say, an overdose victim or someone whose house is on fire also happens to be carrying the virus. If responders know they're entering an area where the virus may be present, they can adjust their protocol to minimize contact and suit up in protective gear, if they've got it.
But the real problem is that we don't have the equipment that we need. And I know the city's trying real hard to do it, like masks, alcohol, hand sanitizer, even PPE suits, which is a personal protection equipment.
A spokesman for the Tampa Police Department says they have an adequate supply of masks for now and have 10,000 more on order. He says officers don't usually wear gowns and that the business community is donating hand sanitizer. Securing protective equipment has been a challenge for departments across Florida, and state officials say they're struggling as well. The federal government recently diverted supplies headed for Florida to New York, the epicenter of the nation's outbreak. And the state's emergency management director called the private market for protective masks a Ponzi scheme. But concerns about getting coronavirus are only part of what first responders are dealing with.
Life has definitely been an adjustment.
Jeff Orange is a lieutenant paramedic with the Orlando Fire Department.
There's safety concerns. There's people at home left wondering what their loved one is doing when they go to work for 24 hours and what they're being exposed to. But on top of that uncertainty, there's still the stressors of everyday life.
Orange is juggling his job with being a supportive husband for his wife, whose small business has slowed down, and who's teaching their kids, now attending school virtually from home. And he says some of his colleagues had sick family members, financial issues, and other problems before the coronavirus upended normal life. And none of that has gone away.
We're still seeing the same things that we saw yesterday, but now we're seeing it through goggles and face masks and gowns.
Orange co-founded a support group for Orlando firefighters and is also the statewide peer coordinator for the Florida Firefighters Safety and Health Collaborative. Because of that experience, his department recently pulled him off paramedic duties at his engine company to help firefighters keep their mental health in check as they respond to COVID-19.
Finding some level of comfort in all of this chaos has to be a high priority.
That's especially the case for first responders battling post-traumatic stress disorder. Dr. Deborah Beidel directs the UCF Restores Clinic. It's known for using virtual reality and exposure therapy to treat trauma in veterans and first responders, including some who survived the Pulse nightclub and Parkland shootings. The clinic had to temporarily close because of coronavirus, but Beidel says therapists are still treating patients through telehealth. She says they're helping first responders cope with this new stressor in addition to their existing trauma.
So talking about things like relaxation training, getting some exercise, a procedure that we call mindfulness, doing things to kind of calm and center themselves as they go about their job and as they address their trauma in treatment.
As for what the community can do to help first responders, donated supplies are always appreciated. But Jeff Orange says even something as simple as saying thank you or just letting a first responder know they're in your thoughts means a lot to them as they continue their fight. For Health News Florida, I'm Stephanie Colombini.
And a big thank you to the first responders here in Jacksonville, especially the ones that we have seen here outside our building at WJCT, helping to manage the flow of cars at the federal COVID-19 testing site at Lot J at TIAA Bank Field. Those officers are out there every day. They are wearing masks to protect themselves, and they are an absolute critical part of this whole effort. And so thank you to them. A quick mention of our situation here at the building. WJCT is part of the news media, so we are classified as essential workers. What that means is just a few of us are continuing to come into the building every day, enough to keep broadcasting and getting essential information to you, the listener and viewer. Just wanted to explain that for those who've asked. Now, our new social distancing society is important for all of us to be safe, but it makes a lot of little things tougher. Birthday parties, weddings, and funerals, too. Planning a funeral takes an emotional toll under any circumstances, but what about now? Keith Epstein owns a funeral home in Pompano Beach, and he also manages a cemetery in Deerfield Beach. He spoke with Katie Switalski about using technology to help people grieve together while trying to slow the spread of the virus.
The idea of live streaming a service isn't new, but it certainly sounds like it might become, with coronavirus, more like a norm for some people.
It's crazy to think that we are in this position where we have to make adjustments to end-of-life services, and I believe that it is going to become a norm for the near future. I'm not sure about long-term. My heart goes out to a lot of these families that are being limited in their time of grief. They don't have their friends or family around them, and it's really important for them to have that support during this time.
What does live streaming a celebration of life or a funeral entail?
So in the past, when we were doing live streaming, it was more for families who were unable to attend, whether they were living in a different state or a different country. And it really allowed them to partake in the funeral, to be there, you know, maybe not physically, but at least emotionally for the families. For us, what we would normally do is we have cameras set up on our chapels, or we'll bring cameras to different synagogues or churches, or even to the cemetery to live stream graveside services so people can be there to watch and that they can also hear the life that's being honored.
For people handling the loss of a loved one right now, this is just a really anxiety-prone time in society at large. Are families talking to you about the stress of this?
We had a funeral in our chapel, and we had to first tell a family, you know, we're sorry we can't allow them, the people that they were all inviting, because you're looking, they were looking at about 50 to 100 people, and based off the CDC recommendations, we're supposed to be keeping it around 10. But I live on Las Olas in Fort Lauderdale, and walking around here, it's like a ghost town right now. Trying to force people to stay home, to not go to a funeral to say goodbye to their loved one is a whole nother, you know, aspect of things that I don't think anybody's thought about. Trying to tell somebody who's going through a very emotional time that, sorry, you know, you can't have as many people as you should to be here to support you is very difficult on us, because we're the ones who have to relay that message directly to them. What we're really doing is we're trying to have families do more graveside services, which would be doing the burial and the committal service, all of it in one location at the cemetery. And then in regards to cremation services, attempting to see if we can have them postpone the larger gathering to a later date. So at least postponing for now, just the service portion. We can always do celebrations of life or any kind of events later down the road. Just in this time, I think it's important that we still proceed with the burial so the family can begin with the grieving process. And then at the time of celebration, it really seems like more of a time to relive memories with friends and family. At the end of the day, you know, we have to make sure that everybody's safe. And I know that, you know, in my case, my staff being safe and the families are safe and anybody who's attending. And something I've really been thinking a lot about lately was I saw like Netflix had a new app that they put out where you can do like movie sharing, where you can watch the same movie, you know, in different apartments, so you can still have your, you know, your friends' night for movies. I think it'd be great to still see something like that, where there'd be support for family and friends who, although they can't come to the home or be there in person, to really still be able to all at once talk to somebody and offer their condolences and really their support.
The idea of an online streamed ceremony, you can't hold someone's hand during a service this way or hug anyone.
I do actually believe that it's taking away from the personal time that we need with our loved ones. My father passed away last year, and I'll tell you that the most important thing for me was being able to be there and say goodbye to him. So I do actually feel for all the families who can't do that and for all the friends who are not able to come in and say goodbye. So yeah, I definitely think it's going to take its toll, and I don't think live streaming is going to be the way of the future. I think that funerals are very personal. It's a time for us to support the family, to grieve, and to really have people to help us as well. You know, we always want to be strong for the families that are suffering, but at the same time, we're just as much affected, you know, because we, you know, we laugh with families, we cry with families.
And that was Katie Switalski reporting. In a moment, a one-minute meditation to help you cope with stress and anxiety. Also, why bike shops are booming right now. We'll be right back.
Many Americans who are sick say they still cannot get tested for COVID-19.
The scariest thing is not getting answers, not knowing what's going to happen when you call the doctor and they're just like, yeah, you're on your own.
While the president claims testing is improving, some patients and healthcare providers tell a far different story. We'll hear more and have the latest updates on the pandemic this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The world's reporters and producers have a singular mission: to put you in touch with events around the globe that affect life here in the U.S. from the coronavirus to global trade to efforts to dial back climate change. Each day we bring you fresh insights, unique voices, one-of-a-kind reporting. Join us for an hour that takes you around the globe. It's right here. It's the world. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. While healthcare workers are on the front lines treating patients with coronavirus, many are becoming infected themselves.
You know, I had to tell my 10-year-old through the door that my COVID swab was positive, and he cried, and he made me promise him that I wouldn't die.
That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Jeffrey Epstein got away with abusing children because he was well-connected and had a lot of money. But one key figure always believed his victims and led a decades-long fight to expose the truth. How did attorney Bradley Edwards keep the case alive? And what more should we know about Epstein's enablers? I'm Sasha Ann Simons. That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
When things become stressful, one of the most powerful things that you can do is just a body scan of your body. So starting with your feet, wherever they are, wherever you are, notice your feet, close your eyes, bring your awareness up from your feet to your knees, notice both knees, and then with your next breath in, move your attention from your knees to your hips, notice your hips, your seat, and your next inhale, move your attention up to your low back, the center of your spine, your thoracic spine, the space behind your heart, your shoulders, and then lastly, with your next inhale, lengthen the crown of your head toward the ceiling, and then take a deep breath out. Those body scans, just the act of scanning your body in that moment, is a present moment awareness exercise that can take you out of your head and whatever you're thinking, and then into the present moment.
And that is a simple one-minute meditation we can all use to cope with stress and anxiety around the COVID crisis. It comes from renowned yogi Dan Nevins of Panavedra. He'll be giving us some more stress-relieving meditation exercises in the weeks ahead. Dan is also emceeing a global Baptiste Yoga virtual fundraiser for first responders and rescue workers. With some local support from Big Fish Yoga in Jacks Beach, you can support it. Just visit baptistefoundation.org. Well, in this time of lockdown, there aren't a lot of activities any of us can do right now, but here's one notable exception. Just get out and ride a bike. Bicycle shops, unlike most other businesses, are booming right now. We spoke about it with Ralph Teton of the Bike Bus in Panavedra. Ralph Teton, owner of the Bike Bus in Panavedra. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Most businesses are shut down right now, and of course, the mayor is issuing a stay-at-home order, shutting down anything but essential business. In this current situation, you have been overwhelmed with business because one of the few things people can do right now is get out and bike. So what's it been like for you?
Definitely overwhelming, which is great, but it's kind of like, I tell people, it's like pulling up into a neighborhood. It's like the Truman Show when we pull up. There are families everywhere on the streets, bikes everywhere, people coming up to the buses and asking how we can fix their bikes and get them on the road.
Right. I mean, people have gotten stir crazy, and getting out for a walk or a bike ride is one of the few things they can do to get some exercise, get a little fresh air. And this is something that I think people really need right now.
Right. It's easy to get the social distancing when you're on your bike.
Yeah, you move by pretty quick.
Right.
And now, you've said that you feel a little conflicted about the fact that this is such a serious time and you're just booming with business when so many other businesses have closed or have even had to file for bankruptcy. How are you dealing?
Exactly.
How are you dealing with that?
Well, we've tried to partner locally with some frontline organizations, some local hospitals, see if we can deliver spin bikes and whatnot to the facilities for the frontliners if they get time to maybe exercise during their shift or after their shift, or even deliver them to their homes. We haven't had any takers. I think we run into insurance with hospitals and whatnot, but that's one way we're trying to figure out how we can support and help our community.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And with the stay-at-home order taking effect, will you have to shut down operations, do you think, or will you find a way to keep going?
So far, I don't see anything shutting down. We definitely don't mind the shutdown if we have to, but I see that we have been deemed essential. And we put some pretty strict measurements in place. When we show up, we communicate through the phone. The bicycles are left outside, and we proceed from there. We finish the bicycles, disinfect them, and then we just email an invoice to the customer. So technically, they don't even have to be present. Some people that want to be present, we keep a good 6 to 10 feet distance from them. But we've always had that procedure in place regardless of the current situation. A lot of people aren't even home when we take care of their bicycles. As long as we can get to them, we can take care of what they need.
That's good to hear. So you do bike repair, and then can people also buy a new bike from you?
Yes, we do everything a normal bicycle store would do. It's an online business, so we communicate that way through email. And as you can imagine right now, people are just calling and they don't even really care what the bicycle looks like. They just want two bikes delivered, and we do that.
And you do it. You make it happen. And this is something that people can do with their spouse and with their family. As awful as all of this is, it's a simple, old-fashioned activity that kind of can bring a family together.
Exactly. I see a lot of mobile businesses in today's society on the road, like veterinarians, car wash, hairstylists. I would imagine all of mobile right now is probably experiencing a boom in business.
Any other advice for people who haven't really biked much in the past and are thinking about doing it now?
Definitely have us come out and make sure your bike is good to go, because we're coming across quite a few bicycles that have been sitting in the garage for quite some time.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, you need that little tune-up, don't you, before you hit
right.
the road. That's a very
exactly.
good point. Well, Ralph Teton, it's a pleasure. You're keeping everyone sane right now from your facility in Ponte Vedra. Ralph is the owner of the Bike Bus. Everybody is riding their bikes right now, and no surprise. Stay safe, Ralph, and you can visit. Thank you. You can visit thebikebus.com for more. Have a great day, Ralph.
You too. Pleasure.
That's our show. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Stay safe out there.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.